I'm Josh Cooperman, and this is Convo by Design with a conversation, a fun one, with Daniel Ian Smith of Village West Design. Here's a quote from Daniel. "I believe everyone deserves to be surrounded by beauty. It's an integral part of what makes us human." What makes us human? That which is integral to making us human. Think about that for a moment. That which makes us human. The part that it enriches us, makes life worth living, meaning, purpose, form, function. I started this podcast because I love design. I love art, architecture, music, and that which enhances the experience of living. I will never forget the pandemic. I still think about it. A great deal, actually. It was the medical community that repaired our minds and bodies, but it was the design community that repaired our souls. Mine, anyway. I don't just love design. I've worked with designers. For my wife's birthday in, gosh, I think it was 2018 or 2019, I hired Nancy Russert, whom you have heard on this show before. I wanted her to create a meditation space in the front yard of our Manhattan Beach home. Man, she crushed it. As much as my wife enjoyed that space, it saved me during the pandemic. That space became a multi-hyphenate space, for sure. Outdoors, when the indoors became too confining. Office, classroom, meditation space, chill with the fam. I mean, it just hang out with friends who were across the deck. It was just, it was remarkable. It was the place where I learned to use Zoom, you know, outside on beautiful days in the summer when nobody else was doing anything. Daniel is a master architect with a distinct set of skills that better the lives of those he serves. And we talk about that and a number of other issues relating to the humanity behind great design. Daniel and I cover topics rarely discussed, like generational nuance as it relates to the way clients feel about and approach design. We're exploring new ground here, and this was really fun, and I hope you enjoy this conversation. I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoyed having it. We'll get to that conversation with Daniel Ian Smith of Village West Design right after this. I am just incredibly proud of this partnership I've got with Thermosol. They have been presenting partners of Convo by Design going on 5 years now. And there is a certain amount of pride that comes with saying that the show is presented by the company that is the best in the world at what they do. Thermosol engineers the most exceptional smart shower products and steam shower systems worldwide, full stop. And it's for a few reasons. First of all, they were the first company to design and patent the technology here in the United States, dating back to 1958. Thermosol, a U.S.-based manufacturer based in Round Rock, Texas, employs an engineering team that designs, tests, and continuously refines the product. Their quality control team tests every single steam generator before it departs the factory. Who else does that? Nobody that I know of. I have the pleasure of working with some world-class designers and architects who tell me, and if you're in the business, you know this, that the idea of luxury has changed, especially when clients want a spa-like bathroom. Steam is mandatory, or it's just not considered a luxury. And if you want to add steam, you have only one true option, my opinion, and that's Thermosol. Mitch Altman, third-generation CEO of this family-owned company of 65 years, continues to innovate in the bathroom and shower space through technological marvels such as intelligent showering systems, sound therapy, aromatherapy, technical interfaces, and so much more. And now Thermosol, the industry leader in steam bath equipment and technology since 1958, as I mentioned, is enhancing its already stellar family of products with the new indoor and outdoor luxury saunas, available in three designs. The configurations are absolutely amazing, and you should probably go check them out. Indoor and outdoor options, it's amazing. You really do need to check them out. Go to thermosol.com or at Thermosol on the socials.
Look, I love that response. I've got
hundreds of questions, but I don't know if asking them now is going to do any good. So we might as well just go. Can I just say, it's funny. It does freak people out sometimes. And for those playing the home game, I'll tell you what I'm talking about. The fact that I do these are conversations, they're not interviews. And I think if I was doing interviews, I would send out questions in advance and we would do a Q&A and I'd put them together. I don't enjoy that. I don't enjoy that process because I feel like, and you and I were talking a little bit before this, I equate this to the same as a music experience where if somebody was going to a concert, I'm the kind of person that goes to a concert. I don't want to hear my favorite band just do the hits. I want to hear them talk to me. I want to hear them, you know, I want to see the real experience. And some people are like, well, yeah, but what happens if a dog barks or the garbage truck comes by or the lawnmower? It's like, that happens in real life. It happens to all of us who have been forced to do Zoom. So with that, you know, a little authenticity check, we do these straight through. And I love doing that because I have people on the show whose work I admire. And I get to select the people that I want to talk to. And we get to talk through their work and all the details and the minutiae of it. And that I love that. So with that, Daniel, thank you for joining me today. Thank you for the long preamble.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. Tell me the story. Give me the backstory. How did you wind up with the firm that you have and why do you do what you do?
It's a great starting question. I think none of us would be in this industry if we weren't passionate about it. And we all have different angles and we all come to it from, you know, from our own experience. But at the end of the day, it has to be deeply satisfying. That's what makes the work interesting and keeps us going. And for me, it has evolved over time, actually. I started out thinking I was going to go into architecture and work on large buildings. And over time, I realized that that wasn't speaking to me. I was kind of going through the motions, you know, and the scale of the work just had to be much more intimate for me to really feel connected to it. And that made me shift basically to interior design. And so I still come at it from a sort of architecture perspective. But the idea that I'm actually connecting with the individuals who are using the space, it's not an anonymous lobby. It's not a restaurant where, you know, I maybe can't meet all the diners. It's not a hotel where, you know, people are coming from far and wide and, you know, it's hard to gauge exactly who it is that's using the space and how they're using it necessarily. And you might not want to know everything that's happening in each hotel room anyway. I'm actually getting to know the individual homeowner and who they are and what makes them tick and what is going to be deeply satisfying to them when they use the space. So that's sort of the evolution of how I got to do this residential interior design.
And you put a priority on the idea behind design therapy. Now, here's what I will say. I think that every designer has to have at least some component, some part of them has to be part psychologist. You have to. And I think why, you know, for me, as I look at it, and I'm curious your take on it, but for me, as I look at it, it's because people don't inherently know what they want or how they want to live. People lately who enlist the services of a designer think that they want to live by how they'll see something staged or styled on Pinterest or Instagram. And that's not really how they want to live. That's the fact that they like how somebody else is living.
Exactly.
And I get and respect that, but it's not you and it's not your authentic self. Talk to me about design therapy.
Well, you said it perfectly. In fact, I think our work here is done. This is the shortest interview you've ever done. So, you know, the funny thing is, it wasn't my idea. This came from client after client saying, I feel like I'm in therapy, or this has been, you know, I've had this breakthrough working with you, or I never thought about how I wanted to feel in a space. I just thought about what it would look like and can't you just make it pretty? And again, that, you know, I could, but that's not deeply satisfying for me. And I think at the end of the day, not to make this just about me, but I have to really be passionate about it, just like we were saying. And I think I do my best work when I'm inspired. And that comes from listening to the client talk about what excites them, what their aspirations are, and what is maybe not working, what problems I can help them solve. And so design therapy was basically my sort of culmination of all of the clients saying this to me. And I think in a nutshell, I will say that functional design is often like the architectural perspective for me. You know, I go in and there's a set of spatial problems I need to solve. There's, you know, we look at circulation, we look at how we move through the space, how the human body is interacting with individual components of the space, with texture and ergonomics and all of those components. And then there's the aesthetic piece. And, you know, I start with the function because I say I can make anything look pretty. And I don't worry so much about that. But there is that aesthetic component and finding out for that individual homeowner what is going to be aesthetically pleasing for them. But the design therapy approach for me is then how do we feel in that space? So it's not just that it looks pretty. Someone might come in to the home who doesn't live there and say, this is gorgeous. Well, that's satisfying in the moment, but what happens later on when, you know, your dinner guest goes home or your house guest goes back to where they live? You want to wake up I want my clients to wake up in the morning, each morning, and just be deeply satisfied and thankful that they live in that space and it reflects who they are and makes them feel good. And what makes them feel good differs from one client to another. And that's the process that we go through in the beginning with what I call the client intake. Sounds kind of clinical, but for me, that is that process of figuring out what the design goal is from a feeling, from a spatial psychology perspective, not just from the functional perspective or the aesthetic perspective. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it not only makes sense, but I think it's important too. You know, what's really interesting is, and I like this conversation because I think it's important to note, sometimes I think many designers just take on clients because if the budget's right, they'll say, well, that's the client for me. That's what I want to do. But it's not always right for them. And I think clients will often take on designers because of what they've seen in the work that the designer has done, even though that designer may not be the best fit for them psychologically, temperamentally. And I think that sometimes budgets blind designers and beautiful images blind clients. So that's why I love what you're talking about. And I think intake does give that feeling of clinical. But look, anyone who's ever had a doctor that they didn't get along with, or anyone who's ever had a psychologist or a psychiatrist, you know, you're sharing these personal, intimate details of your life. And they may not be the right person for you. Let's be honest here. A designer is going to see what you've got in that bottom drawer in your closet.
Oh yeah, we see it all. But it's an important part. It's an important part of the work.
It is.
See it all. Yeah, I don't want my clients to clean their house before I see them for the first time. It defeats the purpose. It totally defeats the purpose. You know, do they not have enough storage space? Well, that's important then. Like, let's figure out what you have to store. If you squirrel it all away, and you know, I do actually during the intake process and surveying the space, I do open cabinet doors and look in closets and look under the bed. But, you know, does that pile of things always live in the closet, or is it usually spread out, you know, because you're using the things? And then, okay, well, we need a more functional space where you can actually do the stuff, do your things with the stuff. That intake process, while potentially sounding clinical, is an important part. And I guess to continue with answering your question about that process, the intake process includes a whole, a whole range of questions that have to do with how the client feels in the existing space, so we can identify, you know, what's working, what's not working, and also this aspirational quality of how is it that you want to feel, and that changes from client to client. I mean, my very first client that I had as an independent designer, right when I started my business, one thing that was really important to him was that he would feel good about the space from someone else's perspective, and that people would come in and he would be proud of his first home. And that was really important to him. So then I had to try and figure out, well, it's not even just about him, but what's going to impress all his friends? So, you know, we went through a process of figuring out what he would feel good about that, you know, would make him feel like he had something unique that maybe his friends didn't have. And then my second or third client, who really was the one that started with this design therapy piece, she has a really interesting story. Can I'll leave her name out, but can I tell you a little bit about her and the process?
Please.
She hired me. She told me, look, you did my friend's house and I love it. And he feels so good about it. I see what can happen when I feel good about the space that I'm in. And I will tell you, I'm really successful in my career. And I just don't feel like my home reflects that at all. I'm embarrassed about it. And I just got out of a relationship. And this is always where it goes. It always, when I say design therapy, you know, I joke about it being very intimate. And, you know, I go through and I look under the bed and all this.
But it always ends with somebody crying over a bottle of wine.
Yes, I'm consoling them over a bottle of wine. So we won't say who drinks more of the bottle of wine. But she's talking to me about this, and she's like, I have to tell you the story of my relationship, my most recent relationship. And I was like, okay, it's interesting. Where's this going? So she was dating some guy. They broke up, and she looked back and she was like, I spent all this money and all this time on this relationship, and it turned out it wasn't a good fit. And then I come back to my home and I don't feel so good about it. So I want to invest this time and energy and money in myself and get something for me out of it. And I'm not ready to date. That was a very difficult relationship. So I'm not looking into that at all right now, but I want you to help me feel good about where I am. And maybe in the future, I'll think about dating again, because right now I'm just embarrassed to even bring anybody home. So we go through this process, and we can talk about this a little later on. I have this process of identifying what I call a triad priority through schedule, scope, and budget. So we go through this, and she decides that, or we decide together, that this is going to be a project that goes over time, and we'll do little by little. It's not going to be this intervention where we rip everything apart right at once. So I don't know, it might be a year later that we finally have tackled each of the rooms in her home. And she like completely transforms. She has her book club over that she had always found reasons, I guess, to like tell the book club she couldn't host them. And she was going to someone else's house. The book club comes over. Everyone's impressed. She feels really good about it. She starts inviting her family to spend more time at her house instead of going to their houses. And we actually finished working together. I didn't really follow up with her on her dating life. I mean, at the end of the day, it's really not my business, as intriguing as it is.
Isn't it though?
Well, so here's the thing. She reaches out to me a few months later and she says, I have to tell you, I started dating someone and it was so nice to bring him home and not be embarrassed about the space. And a few months, I feel like it really wasn't that long after that. She's like, you have to come to the wedding. And I'm like, well, I'd love to, but isn't that, pretty intimate. You want to have a wedding where you know everyone. And I only know you. I haven't even met this person. She's like, no, without you, this wouldn't exist. I wouldn't have been in this relationship. None of this would have happened. You have to be at the wedding. You are an integral part of this. So I ended up inviting a friend of mine who at the time was in wedding planning and design. And she's like, I'll go to the wedding. I don't care if I know anybody. And we go, and it's like being a guest of honor at this event where I don't even know any of the people. But it was such a transformation for that client. And she said, this really has been like therapy. And you got me through this. And without you, I wouldn't be where I am. And I'm so grateful for it. So that sort of started me on this path of thinking about, well, you know, maybe there's another way to approach this that's not just about function and aesthetics. And the measure of success maybe isn't about, or I should say, not just about the functional or the aesthetic component, but also about how the space makes us feel. And in particular, for my work, how the individual homeowner feels at home.
And it's really important nowadays that, you know, it's funny because I think we're in this really interesting place right now where people are moving around. Many who can afford had second homes that for a couple of years turned into their first and primary home. And what a lot of people who didn't have the means for a second home learned how to make their home more functional, you know, regardless of budget, because when you, it's funny, we get really creative when there's a need, regardless of budget, when there's a need, we get even more creative. And I think that that's what we've all kind of learned over the last couple of years, that home, the idea of home and our home in particular has got to be more creative. Functional. It has to be more functional. So the ideas that you're espousing here and the things that you're talking about are really important. It's not, design just isn't about how much money you can throw at something to make it look so amazingly nice. And I think that idea, that those principles have now woven their way inextricably into design, where I kind of feel like if designers aren't taking the time to have those tough conversations and do the therapy with their clients, they're not really, the clients are not getting everything that they want out of their space.
I agree with you about that, but it's also, you know, at the end of the day, so I grew up right outside of New York City and I lived for 27 years in Manhattan. And so I don't shy away from having difficult conversations with people. And I also grew up in a home of social workers. And so I grew up talking about emotions and feelings. And I will say that's not everybody's cup of tea. Not everyone has a fluency with all of that. And that's okay. And I think for a lot of clients, they don't want to be challenged by the work of working on their home, of renovating the space that's really sort of central to them, that they you know, have this big investment in, both financially and otherwise. And, you know, that's okay. I might not be the right person for that job then, because I do come in and I do challenge the homeowner. And the same thing is true for designers, right? You know, some designers might not want to challenge their clients. And I think that's totally valid and okay. In order for me to do the type of work that I'm doing, I end up having to challenge a little bit and I ask tough questions and I sort of get in there and figure out the why behind, you know, the way things are. And why is it that we want to go in this direction? And how do you feel, you know, how does this make you feel if we make these changes? And what is it that you want? How do you want to feel with changes? So clients often come to me and they say, oh, I don't know. We do the initial walkthrough and they say, you know, I'd really like to move forward and renovate the space. And I'm thinking we move this wall over here and add something here and rearrange the space. And I saw this piece of furniture or this light fixture. And I really, this is what I want you to help me with. And I always gently, I think, take a step back and say, well, why are we doing this? What is it that you want out of the space? And how do you want the space to function for you? What is it that we're asking the space to do? And then we'll figure out later where that wall needs to go, or even if it needs to go anywhere, and what components, what lighting or furniture or accessories or colors or textures or any of those things, what fits with our goal, and not vice versa. It's a different way to look at the process than possibly the other designers and homeowners are interested in doing or comfortable doing. But I think that's okay. One thing with the pandemic that I will say is that I think we all are a little raw still. And I've noticed that people are more forthcoming with talking about their emotions and feelings, and not just about space. But that's something that I feel like I haven't had to push quite so much to really get there. You know, I walk in and I hear it all. Like, you know, I'm working from home now. It really frustrates me. You know, like I need to solve this problem. My partner and I are, you know, sharing space and it's driving me crazy and we need to figure this out. I don't have to dig so deep. It's pretty much there on the surface.
You are listening to my conversation with Village West Design's Daniel Ian Smith, and we will get right back to that right after this. As a busy professional designer, you know how important it is to find the right partnerships. Partnerships that allow you to specify the right products for every project. Professionals like you don't just have time to sit around and waste, right? So let me tell you about one of my partnerships. Pacific Sales is here to serve you with expert, knowledgeable, and non-commissioned professionals to help you specify the right product for all your projects. Non-commissioned. That means their only incentive is your satisfaction. Pacific Sales Kitchen and Home, a Best Buy company, has just that, with over 60 years of service in Southern California. Pacific Sales is your destination for exploration, advice, and inspiration. And you will find all your favorite brands, like Monogram, and their commitment to providing exceptional products, starting with materials. Monogram sources commercial-grade stainless steel on their refrigerators, unscratchable sapphire glass on their cooktop knobs, durable marine-grade bearings on their dishwasher racks. Monogram takes inspiration from the leading-edge materials used in the high-end automotive and aeronautics industry to provide you with lasting beauty and exceptional quality. The beauty is backed by the same level of attention to performance, which is why Monogram appliances are trusted and sought after by chefs all over the country. Chain-driven French oven doors that can be opened with one hand, and an industry-exclusive hearth oven that allows for all-electric indoor brick oven-style cooking without the need for external ventilation. These are just a few of the things that make Monogram so special. Pacific Sales features Monogram appliances, and Pacific Sales Kitchen and Home team is here to help you and offer their Pro Rewards program, which is a trade program unlike any you have experienced before. And here's the cherry on top, access. Access to exclusive builder trade incentives from top brands like Monogram. Visit a Pacific Sales showroom today to learn how you can unlock additional savings and benefits. Don't miss out on the opportunity to work with the best of the best. Visit Pacific Sales Kitchen and Home today and elevate your projects to new heights. Pacific Sales Kitchen and Home, where excellence meets expertise. Man, I love this. I have a new sponsor partner on the show that I want to introduce you to if you're not already familiar with them. If you are a specifying designer, architect, landscape architect, or savvy design enthusiast, if you have heard about the quiet luxury movement, this idea of crafting a lifestyle around understated elegance, simplicity, and sophistication, there's more to it than that. And I will add uncomplicated living. Isn't that what we all strive for? I am extremely happy. I'm really thrilled to share a company that embodies all of this, utilizing proprietary technology and a focus on sustainability in their stunningly beautiful products. It's TimberTech. TimberTech is the premium decking company delivering multi-tonal color blending and natural wood textures in a product that is virtually indistinguishable from a natural wood product. What does this mean? It means it's everything wood should be, a beautiful look that blends seamlessly with a well-designed space, providing years of enjoyment and performs the way you want it to. No splintering, fading, peeling, cracking, or rotting. I had a wood deck at our Manhattan Beach home, and I gotta tell you, it was exasperating every year doing the random board flip, taking out nails, resetting them, restaining them. It was a complete pain. It was complicated, and I didn't look forward to it. I wish I had TimberTech, because TimberTech is not only uncomplicated, it's beautiful. It comes in over 20 finish options and 9 collections, and 85% of the material is recycled. This is premium decking for your next project. Learn more and specify it for your next design project. TimberTech on the socials or timbertech.com, where you can find a retailer near you, as well as a number of tools to create, design, order samples, and get the expert help you may need. TimberTech is uncomplicated luxury and performs. It's your choice for your next deck project. But let me ask you a question about that. How much of that do you think, and you're the person to ask, because you know you're at the front lines of this, and I love this. How much of this do you think is pandemic related versus generational? And I'll expand on that a little bit. Like, one of the things that I've really noticed in talking to as many creatives as I have that are having these conversations with their clients, it's kind of like you look at generationally speaking, and there are some through lines by generation that you can kind of attach to each. And we can start, you know, you start with boomers, right? Who are not really by percentage of population in the design business space anymore. They're kind of exiting out of it in what might be their last home, the last home they live in. I'm not saying it's end of life, but it's kind of like they're exiting out of that competitive part of their lives, right? And boomers were informed, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s by the movie Wall Street, what was happening in the economy in the 80s and 90s and how they wanted to live. And they wanted to live based on how it showed and keeping up with the Joneses. And the money that showed is where the money is, where the budget went, right? Then you get into their kids, millennials, which is basically the start of, I mean, sorry, not millennials, Gen X, right? Which is the start of this hardworking group of individuals that were informed primarily what was happening in the 80s and 90s, you know, and learned to work hard, but everyone got a trophy because their parents, the boomers, weren't spending as much time with them. They were working all the time. And so everyone got a trophy to make the kids feel special. And then there was this sense of, well, now I'm so special. And then it led into millennials who were like, look, it's all about me. I just want one thing to look really nice and make my parents' basement look nice. That was kind of like the joke, right? And then when they went off, now they're working. Now they're working with designers and they've kind of entered the space. And then you get to Gen Y and Z, where it's all about the personal experience. Like, work doesn't matter. Money doesn't matter. It's just how I feel. And they're so emotive. You know, it feels like, generationally speaking, that's dictating how much information they're willing to share based on how me it needs to be. I don't know. Am I onto something? Are you seeing that?
That's a good question. Well, so as you know, I've migrated from the East Coast to the West Coast, and being in the San Francisco Bay Area, a lot of the projects are with younger folks, with folks that are in tech and, frankly, employed by and surrounded by technology that didn't even exist for the previous generations that you're talking about. So I think that's still evolving. I definitely see what you're saying about generationally being more comfortable talking about feelings and emotions. And it does make sense that that is something that is evolving over time. I actually really like where that's going, and not just because it makes my work more interesting and satisfying for me. But I think, you know, like I said, growing up around social workers and therapists, I think it's healthier for us. That said, I see more commonality than so maybe on this you know, the way the initial conversation goes is different, but I would say deeper down, we're still all grappling with the same issues. And I should put this disclaimer in there. I am not a trained therapist. I do not have a degree in psychology. I have a degree in architectural history and Italian. So, you know, there's
Wait. Architectural history and Italian.
And Italian, yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I spent a year living in Italy. I have a tattoo in Italian. It's definitely a part of who I am. Actually, it's interesting. This is a little tangential, but you know, culturally, I think the stereotype is absolutely spot on that Italians are much more likely to be emotional and in touch with their emotions. I think saying emotional can have some negative connotations for those of us in from a culture where you know, you're not supposed to share all that, but I say it in a positive way because that's part of what makes us human. Is, I mean, we are emotional, so might as well own it. Like, if we're having the feelings, as the, you know, the current generation is saying, so, you know, we should share them and be honest with ourselves about them and the people around us, like, this is what's going on. But in any case, I'm a transplant. And so I'm still figuring out what it means to be in California and how clients might approach things differently and how I might need to approach clients differently. And generationally also, I think that's something I'm still figuring out. But at the end of the day, I think either coast, any of the generations, even any culture, we still want the same. It comes back to having the same needs for our home, so the psychological needs for our home, and finding out what those needs are and what the individual client has to get from their home environment in order to feel supported is that part doesn't seem like it's changed to me. And the generational part, I'm not saying you're not onto something, and it is different. I mean, it's probably hard to have perspective right now. And, you know, a couple generations later, we'll look back and we'll be like, well, it's very easy to see this generation approaches things this way and this other generation decided to do it differently. At least it's hard for me to see being right in the middle of it. But at the end of the day, we all have the same range of feelings, and getting to the bottom of how that affects how we use space and what we need from our homes, that part doesn't seem like it's different.
It makes sense to me, but it's interesting because I think that because you're in San Francisco mm-hmm. is very, very similar to Manhattan. I think the two are very, the similarities between the island of Manhattan and the city of San Francisco are very, very similar. Being a native Angeleno and a Californian who had kind of like this philosophical rivalry with San Francisco growing up, you know, and again, being a native Angeleno where all of these New Yorkers migrated because the weather was better and the beach, and sort of seeing the difference in philosophical approach to life in general. I love it. I think it's great. I think the difference in California, just it's bifurcated, completely bifurcated between Northern California and Southern California. They're very, very different.
That I have noticed for sure.
But I also think too, and again, to your point, you know, I think that there are so many factors that go into the life now as it relates to design and what people want out of their homes and some of these things. And I kind of wanted to focus on something that I noticed through your website. You know, I talk to designers a great deal about the work that they do. And when I go to portfolios, yours is the first website I've ever seen where your portfolio is broken out by space, not by project. And I think that says a lot about you. I really do. I think it's interesting too, because your website, and for those who want to go see it, it's villagewestdesign.com. You can also check the show notes for a link to Daniel's website. But it's just, you've broken out the website clinically. And I feel like that kind of speaks to the designer that you are, and that this whole idea of, you know, a therapeutic approach to design doesn't make it clinical, doesn't make the work clinical, but because the approach is coming from a client first perspective, really drilling down to what the needs are and pulling out all the extemporaneous to get to what the pure needs are, is really an interesting approach. It has to come with some pitfalls too, I would imagine.
You know, I probably wouldn't describe it like this to a prospective client, because I wonder if it would scare them. But if I could actually put a blindfold on them and not even talk about the visual part of design at all until a much later meeting, that would actually make my work easier, and I think would give me a truer sense of what it is that I need to do, you know, for me to really plan out my work as the problem solver than being distracted by all of this visual stuff. I actually recently hosted I do a bunch of folk dancing, and I hosted this incredible band member, clarinetist, for this folk band. And we had this great conversation just last weekend. And she was explaining that for her, sound and acoustic space can be very distracting for her. Like there's some like car goes by and she hears the rhythm. And I'm not going to articulate this well, because this is not my forte, but you know, she's like, you know, diagnosing the structure of the beat that's inherent in anything that's happening in her world. And for me, I get very distracted by visual stuff. And I think that that's true for a lot of the people that I'm about to work with or just setting out to work with, that the visual part can be very distracting. And if I could put a blindfold on and say, don't worry about that. Don't worry about how the space is going to come together or what it's going to look like, or like I was saying before, where this wall is going to go, or you know, how the space is going to be lit or the palette or any of those things. Let's just talk about how it needs to feel for you and what you want out of the space that doesn't have to do with the design part. Let me do that. So, you know, I'll say to my team, another way to look at this is I'll say to my team, and Village West Design, you know, I will say it all works so well because I have a good team to work with. And so that's a big piece of it. And, but, you know, I am the captain of the ship, and I'll say to the team, I'll say, you know, people will say like, well, what is so-and-so, this client of ours, what would they want for this? Or what did they say about, you know, what they wanted for, I don't know, whether we're picking out a piece of furniture or we're looking at the floor plan or whatever it is. And I'll say, don't worry about, you know, what they wanted or what they said they wanted for this piece. Let's go back to the goals that we set out together. And it is client-centered in that the client is coming up with the goals with us, but we're the professionals. We're the ones that have to captain the ship. And so we are going to figure out what is the best way to get there. And there has to be this trust between the homeowner and the designer so that the designer can actually go and do the work and not sort of try and solve the problem themselves. And that's that's a big piece of this also, is that communication and relationship building in order to get there. And that's an exciting part too.
How has moving from east to west, specifically New York to California, affected the manner in which you design? Has it changed the narrative for you? And let me just preface this by saying, again, being a native Angeleno and growing up in LA and having so many friends who moved, you know, in my case, it was from New York to LA, where there's a, call it a crunchier vibe in LA. And because San Francisco is very Manhattan-like, there are more similarities than Southern California. But how has that changed the narrative for you? How has that changed the way you view design?
That's a great question. You know, I'm still figuring it out. And I think my mother has this saying that wherever you go, you take yourself with you. And I, you know, I'm still processing things the way I would, even if it may be from a New York perspective. I still have that energy. I still am connected the way I am connected. And that part hasn't necessarily changed. It is true that my environment has changed and the way that people do things around me may be different. I am really interested, now that I'm a Californian, I am really interested in this north-south dichotomy. And I haven't actually figured it out entirely. I'm still figuring it out. First of all, the distances in the state are tremendous. Someone's like, I have a friend in Seattle who said, I'm going to be in California. Can we get together? I'm like, oh, where will you be? She's like, I'm going to go to Santa Monica. I was like, well, that's like a 6.5 hour, 8 hour, depending on traffic drive.
It's an eight and a half hour drive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. I grew up outside of New York. I grew up in Connecticut. I mean, you could traverse the entire state 4 times in that time frame. And so I'm still figuring a lot of this out and what my new home is and what it means and how Californians process things differently. I will say there's a casual nature that is really welcome and that I feel like I can sort of just lower my shoulders a little bit, take a breath. You know, you called it the sort of like crunchy component. And from my East Coast perspective, that was always met with like a little bit of a negative, sort of a negative connotation. And, you know, certainly in the design world, we often talk about refinement. And so that's, you know, that sort of stereotype of crunchy and relaxed almost feels like, well, maybe it's too casual. But what I'm learning from being here is that it's not that people don't still want a refined space or, that they, that they have expectations or are sophisticated. Like that's a very New York centric thing that like you leave the island of Manhattan and it all goes to whatever, but it's not that. It's just that people are, I think, a little bit more patient. In New York, we're not known for being patient. And on the one hand, that means we get a lot of stuff done and that's great. But at the same time, you know, there's something to being in California and saying, you know what, instead of measuring the success of my week by how many hours I logged at my desk, what if I looked at it from the other side and, hey, I managed to like take a break early on a Thursday afternoon and go to the beach and catch some waves. I mean, that's a very different perspective and that feels a little healthier to me. And so that part I have noticed, and that also comes up in the work where the schedule is maybe a little bit more relaxed. You know, my phone doesn't ring with people saying, hi, I already hired the contractor, but now I realize I need your help. That would happen all the time in New York, all the time. And, or people would say, you know, we're planning ahead. We'd like to move in June 1st. And I'm like, wait a minute, it's April. That doesn't give us enough time to even like select a contractor that we know is going to work out and be able to accept the job. So those are the types of things that I've noticed are different. I think it also shows up in the design, but I haven't figured out exactly how. And also to go back to your original point about breaking up the process and being clinical about it, and me saying I would love to put a blindfold on the homeowner when we start our process, I almost don't want to figure out too much detail. I don't want to break it down too much about exactly what's different, because at the end of the day, the process is still the process and we're still going to get there. And each homeowner is unique. Each home is going to be unique. And if, you know, we're going through it at a sort of a more rapid pace or it's a more relaxed schedule, we're still going to get there. And so I don't want to overthink it. It's something, you know, I've been in therapy I'm not currently, but I have been in and out of therapy for good chunks of my life. And it's been wonderful. I work with some great professionals to get through various things that are going on in my life. And one of the things that I got from my own personal journey is that it's not important that I necessarily figure out what's happening and I just trust the process. You know, I don't need to know how the therapist was trained or, what they're writing down on their pad of paper if they have one, although I was always amazed that no one ever had one. Like they somehow remembered everything. I can't remember what I had for dinner last week. So I obviously would not necessarily be great at that. I have to take notes, but I don't think it's important that we all understand the process of whoever is navigating that ship, whoever's captaining the ship for us, as long as we trust that we're going to get there.
Okay. There's so much to unpack there, and we are going to run well out of time before we can unpack all of it. But it's funny. You know what, Daniel?
I was worried we wouldn't have anything to talk about, Josh.
Not possible. I am so excited for you. I really am. And I'll tell you why. It's funny because I've moved around a lot in my life, and you know, I'm working in Tulsa right now. I've lived in Dallas before. And if you want to talk about distance and not really understanding the concept of distance from looking at a map, try driving across Texas, or trying to get from one part of Texas to the other. It's just, and there's not really the same kind of scenery you get in California. So if you haven't done the drive yet from San Francisco to LA, it is probably eight and a half hours, depending on if a bridge is still up in Big Sur, but it's,
I did, that, I got, trapped.
That's a, it's a beautiful drive though, right?
It's gorgeous. I actually just recently did it and I got trapped because the Grapevine was closed. And I sat at the outlet mall for like 4 hours. Like, you know, do I need anything from Calvin Klein? I don't think so. I just kind of want to continue with my drive and get where I'm going.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to plan weather accordingly, especially in the Grapevine. But here's what's interesting. The thing about New Yorkers is really funny. Because New Yorkers would come out to California and get so frustrated with Angelenos that they tried to make it like New York. You know what I mean? You come out because the sunshine and the vibe and it's cool and it's chill and it's relaxed. And the first thing New Yorkers try to do is make it into Little Manhattan. It's just, it's crazy how that works. But San Francisco is a kindred spirit. That's, I think the San Franciscans are very frustrated with Angelenos, you know. We are way too chill. We're way too laid back. I am way too verbose for most New Yorkers. Like, I'm verbose in my pattern of speech. It takes me a while to get to where I'm going, and New Yorkers just want to be there already. But what's interesting is the design is very much the same. California is bifurcated in that philosophy as well. San Francisco has, if you could define regions by peanut butter. San Francisco.
Now you're talking my language. I am the biggest peanut butter critic I know.
Love it. So San Francisco is very much your Skippy smooth. Okay. And I think Los Angeles would better be defined as maybe your Kirkland brand of crunchy, because it is chunky. It is kind of experimental. It is like, you know, in Southern California, we have torn down so many, it doesn't matter if you're a Neutra or a Schindler or Paul Revere, it doesn't matter who the architect or designer is. If the space is beautiful, if the lighting is right, if the architect has a client who wants to try something new, it's just going to happen. You know, it's unfortunate, but sometimes you get into that conversation of what makes iconic design and what makes design worth saving. New York has, you know, realized what it started in the 60s, where there's a move to preservation. San Francisco caught on to it a little bit earlier in this move to preservation and saving certain things. Whereas Los Angeles is still, let's try new things. You don't like it, tear it down. We'll build something new. We'll do it again. That spirit of experimentation, I think, defines the people who live there. And I think that also defines what they want and expect out of their designers. So someone like you, who has this, I don't want to call it a clinical necessarily approach, but a therapeutic approach to design, where it's like, how do we get to the core of what you want and then design around that? I think it's special. I think it's unique, and I think it's really conducive. I'm guessing that you're going to get, if you don't already have clients in Southern California, that you're probably going to do pretty well there.
That sounds great, except the commute is going to be a long one.
you can hop on
Southwest and you're there in, you know what, like 40 minutes.
Yes, but in a post-pandemic world, this idea of virtual and remote design has made it possible to work elsewhere. Are you doing that, or do you need to be there?
Actually, that's a really good question. And that has changed a lot during the pandemic. I feel like everything sort of changed to catch up with what we at Village West Design were already doing. I mean, I have team members scattered everywhere. In fact, I have team members that I have not met in person who've worked with me for, 2-3 years. And because everything is remote, but we were already doing this. And now I feel like everyone else has sort of caught up, because this definitely is a market change during the pandemic. And I think this is a global one and we're still grappling with it, where we used to insist that things happen face-to-face, meaning in person, where we're both inhabiting the same space. And now we have this shared space like you and I have right now, and we're still communicating. And it, as humans, we're really adaptable, and that connection can still be there, even if we are not sitting down at the same table and touching the same chairs. But that's something where I've found that clients have sort of awakened to this possibility, where in the early days, which is only a few years ago, when I was totally bi-coastal and flying back and forth every month, it was hard for me. But second of all, it was something that I thought I had to do, because clients were expecting me to be there for an in-person meeting. And then COVID happened, and you know, nobody wanted me even in their home, because it was like, you know, we're going to wave to each other, you know, outside with our masks on. And this is back when, you know, half of us were washing our groceries. And we may not still be there, but one of the things that has persisted with that is this idea that we can still form a connection, we can still communicate, we can still make progress when we're not in the, you know, physically in the same city together. And that's something that really has been a dramatic shift, and that has enabled me to work without necessarily being there in person for everything. But I think it's the expectations around me that have changed. My team and I were having Zoom meetings already. We were already used to working remotely and across different time zones. And now, instead of everyone saying, how do you do that? That's bewildering. Like, that just doesn't seem like it would work. Now everyone's like, oh yeah, that's the same. Half of my team members are around the world and we have team meetings and somebody is in Singapore and somebody else is in Germany. So we've all kind of caught up in that way, I think.
Yeah. And it's an interesting concept because it's only gonna, I think it's only gonna get more fractured. Because, but by the same token, I think that what that also does is that also opens up design. I think design is becoming more democratized. I think it's opening up to people who have not traditionally used designers before.
I totally agree. And I think that's really important because my core philosophy is that everyone deserves a home that supports them. Everyone should be happy in their home. And actually not everyone needs to go through this very expensive, protracted process of gut renovating and refurnishing and all of this. In order to be happy, things can be easily tweaked. And for many of us, especially depending on budget and accessibility and the amount of time that we want to allocate to this, because, you know, let's face it, not everyone has the energy to go through with a renovation, and that's okay. But we can still each tweak our spaces in order to make sure that they support us and that we're happy in our homes. And that democratization, I think I totally agree with you. I think that's only there are more and more people that are going to come into the design world as consumers. And I mean, we've already seen that, right? You know, this is what's been happening over the past few years. And I think I agree with you. And you keep saying this, you've said this, I've heard this on your other podcasts, that this is the direction we're going. And I totally agree. And I think it's actually a really good thing. I think as professionals, we need to remain vigilant and flexible, but we're leading a very important charge to transform the spaces that we use and help everyone figure out, using the languages that we know, how to make that happen.
Yeah, and it's fun, and I love what you do. And for those who, again, want to see Daniel's work, villagewestdesign.com, and you can also check the link in the show notes. Daniel, I cannot thank you enough for the time. I hope you enjoy your new vibes in California, and I'm going to follow you. I cannot wait to see what you do out there.
I'm excited to figure it out myself too. Thank you, Josh. Thank you for this interview. It's been really fun talking to you.
Design Hardware's newly remodeled showroom is where you will find a gallery-style space with a thoughtful display of products, purposefully positioned to allow unbridled exploration and discovery. High-end faucets, luxury tile, natural stone, wood floors, and bespoke hardware selections are presented in a holistic manner, strategically arranged to stimulate creativity and transition your vision from the conceptual stage to a fully realized space. Conveniently located, free parking available. Stop by to find your inspiration. Collect samples, get expert advice, and tackle everything on your shopping list all in one place. Visit them online at designhardware.com or in the real world, 6053 West 3rd Street in Los Angeles. Daniel, thank you. Loved our time together. Architecture and Italian. Okay, I love that. Thank you to my partner sponsors, Thermosol, Pacific Sales, Monogram, and Design Hardware, and TimberTech, for not just supporting Convo by Design, but for supporting the design and architecture community. Thank you. You, yes, you, for taking the time to listen, download, subscribe, and engage with the show. If you have a design friend that doesn't know about the show, or even someone that's not in design that just loves design, send them a link to this episode. They might enjoy it as well. And if you want to connect, please do. ConvoByDesign@outlook.com and on Instagram @ConvoByDesign with an X. I will have something very interesting for you next week, so make sure you are subscribing to the podcast, which you can find everywhere you find your favorite podcasts. But you knew that because you listened to the show. And thank you again. Until next week, be well and take today first.